This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
If you haven't already, make sure you check out the new and improved VSiN.com. Our website's got a fresh new look, enhanced navigation, and a mobile-first focus, but all that same great content you are used to, and it is College Hoops NCAA Tournament Central right now. Everything you need to know for each and every game and round of the tournament when it comes to future stats, trends, everything. Make sure you check it out now at VSiN.com. A couple games in action. We will update you with those halftime score with those halftimes and beyond as the show goes on today. But even though no Michael Lombardi on a Friday, it's a Mike Palm Friday. We still have plenty of NFL to discuss.
And with Sunday, too, coming up this weekend.
You are on Sunday
Palm,
this week.
Palm. It's a Palm Sunday, the Sunday before Easter.
Beautiful. Coming up. Beautiful. Yeah. We'll also have, does Palm have a qualm later on in the show today?
When are we going to get the Palm before the storm?
We still have to figure out conceptually what that segment actually
to make
will
sense
be.
To sports betting.
We'll get there, though. It will happen. Best believe. Friday's moving forward. But the NFL draft is just over a month away. So with that, of course, you've got rumors, reports, potential trades ramping up. One team, it's the center of some of those conversations right now. The Arizona Cardinals, because of some comments that Monty Austinfort, their general manager, made on the podium on Wednesday. He said there will be a big neon sign that says open when it comes to potentially trading that number 4 overall pick. Quote, I don't like it blinking. It messes with my eyes, but we're always going to be listening. Do you think that's the right approach for this team considering the holes that they have, or do they need to go get whoever that top player is most saying that it's Marvin Harrison Jr.?
It's interesting because from a betting perspective, like 4 and 5 are where the draft open up to try to figure out where the Cardinals and the Chargers are going to go, right? So if the pick trades hands, obviously that's going to affect the betting markets. A lot of people think Harrison's the best player in the draft, regardless of position, right? And so I'm sure they're going to, if somebody's going to give them 3 ones or something, like 2 ones and a 2 or something, they're going to listen, right? But yeah. You're right. They have needs. They certainly have a lot of needs. So, and there's another thing, like we talk about how many years can the Bears trade the number one pick with their fan base? There's another thing with a fan base, right? I mean, you got a 4.
Yeah.
What are you going to do? Make a splash, get somebody that's really uber talented that can to make a difference now. So I think everybody's always open for business, right? Yeah. Depending on the offer.
He just, did you see the clip at all of the press conference? He seemed very eager about it. And we know
big
how
neon sign.
Exactly. And we know how eager, I mean, not eager, but extremely active they were in last year's draft. You've got a guy like JJ McCarthy, whose stock is certainly on the rise.
To 4? Can he go all the way to 4, Stormy?
I don't get it. I don't, but like that's all that I keep hearing. And he's got his pro day today out there at Michigan. He's going to be the belle of the ball. Everybody's going to watch to see what he can do. I'm very curious to see how this is going to play out. You're seeing like 5 QBs taken in the top 12 in a lot of these mock drafts.
Michael said 6 in the first round. Yeah. Remember on the Pressing 3 a couple weeks ago.
I said that to him with the expectation that he'd be like, oh, no, these teams are reaching. There's no way. No. And he's like, no, it's very possible.
Yeah, 6.
That's insane to me. That's insane to me. Marvin Harrison Jr., $2 favorite to go number 4 overall. The Arizona Cardinals, obviously, in that spot. J.J. McCarthy, plus 330, the next shortest shot on there. 27-1 as a starter at Michigan. He's consistent, knows how to win, smart, all these things. But there are so many questions about him actually throwing the ball.
It's like a game manager in college, though, of a good team. He's like, he really is. Good decision making. Don't turn the ball over. Yeah. Make a few throws. Have a little bit of mobility with your feet. But the passing, all the passes, the arm strength, all that stuff. He fit well into Harbaugh's system. That's great. But how does that translate into the pro offense? I don't know. If in the number 6 that Michael talked about, do you think the one that knocks it out is Bo Nix will not be a first round pick? I think Penix might be.
So I think the only knock that you really have on Penix is the injuries. Yeah. Yeah, it's the fact that he's, you know, multiple ACL injuries, and that's a scary thing to invest in a quarterback who is older, right? Like, he's not one of the young, spry Drake Mays coming out of the draft at his age. So I get it, but talent-wise, if he's able to produce at the level that he did this past year for Washington, the past 2 years for Washington, like, I think that he's a first-round pick. But this McCarthy stuff and just the way that he's risen to be considered that high just blows my mind a little bit.
Like, if Alabama beats them in the Rose Bowl, is he still, are they still consider him to be, it's going to be, I mean, 330? He's only plus 330 to go fourth?
Yeah. Vikings a minus 130 favorite for him to get drafted there after what they did.
That makes sense.
That wheel and dealing with the Texans. So, you know, reading the tea leaves there, what's going to happen. We also had Caleb Williams have his pro day earlier this week. I thought some of the comments coming out of Caleb Williams' pro day were interesting. Daniel Jeremiah said it was a salad pro day.
Proof of life.
Proof of life pro day. It's not a show off day. It's just about taking care of business. Lewis Riddick said it wasn't spectacular from a throwing standpoint, but that was intentional and it was very targeted from a standpoint of what he wanted to show, and that his footwork was dialed in and that within structure he could play with poise and those types of things.
Well, that is a question, right? He got to be very free and loose, a lot of turnovers. I mean, Darnold turned the ball over at USC. He came in and turned the ball over a ton too. Some of it's because they're so talented and they can make these broken plays, but some of it's decision making as well. And I think that's a big thing for him. Can he play within a system? Obviously the Bears want to run the football. You're now going to play in a cold weather. I know they had to go to Oregon and Oregon State and Washington State, but now you're going to play in December, you know, in Green Bay, and you're going to play in Chicago. Interesting. If they build the new stadium there, they got to have a dome, I would think, because I think you have to have a dome now to get a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And they will want to be obviously going to spend that kind of money. You want to be in a Super Bowl rotation, right? So if they build in Arlington, end up building in Arlington Park, they would have a dome, which would make three out of four teams there.
Even everybody was so upset at SoFi because it's the half open. It's like a half a dome, half not. Like the national championship was there last year and it's raining through and everybody's still all bitter about it. Even though Matthew Stafford said, he's like, it's never rained here, because he was there, a Georgia alum. He was there and he was like, I've never experienced this. But
you know, the A's stadium here will not be a retractable roof.
It won't? It's I thought
full,
it was.
Nope. It's a full dome. It's all glass. Okay. So you look out into the city, but it's closed. And when we talked to their owners, we said that we're in a retractable roof. And he said, you know, all the teams we talked to that put them in, they don't like them. They very rarely use them, like 10 games a year. You're required a certain number. They hate it. So they went with a full dome.
I didn't realize that. That's very interesting. One last thing on Caleb Williams, because another big question mark about him, even though I say question mark, let's use that term loosely, considering he's minus 3,500 to be the top overall pick this year. It's going to happen. He's going to be a Chicago Bear. I think that the conversation around it potentially being somebody else at this point is silly. But the personality aspect is always the thing that's going to come up with him. And another big takeaway from like the reports that I've seen from talent evaluators and scouts and analysts that have left there from being in person, were that he did have really, really good interactions with his teammates, and he didn't have that air of the entitlement that I think a lot of people have made him out to have.
Did you do any of their games while he
not
did?
With him? Mm-mm.
I don't know. I mean, there's sort
I got
of
a lot of Jackson Dart.
You get it,
and Keaton Slovis.
I like Jackson Dart. He's a tough kid.
Yeah, he's doing well.
Run
now
between
in
the
SEC.
Tackles. I mean, I think there's a narrative with him, obviously, and he didn't talk when they lost. And then the pictures of him in the, what was it, $10,000, $20,000 a month pad that he's living in. And that, is he tough enough? Is he a leader and all that? Who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows? Are there, I guess I shouldn't answer, but are there certain kids who are 19, 20, 21 years old, when you interview them on the sidelines, you get a sense of projecting their future from the way they handle themselves?
So I think there are some, like, for example, and I don't want to like bash on the guy because he already lost his job this year, but Desmond Ridder is somebody that I heard nothing but such glowing positive reviews about him in terms of his leadership, the way that he acts, the way he carries himself. And then I got on the sideline of one of their games and like the body language was terrible. And I interviewed
him
that
week. Was that the Navy game where they almost lost? Everywhere you went, you were wreaking havoc on these great seasons.
I went through a phase of being a bad luck charm. Okay, we got it into gear this year. At least the game I did with Drake May in North Carolina this year, it started off a little bit rough, but they got it together and he ended up having a 400-yard game. So it was okay. So I at least got one good Drake May experience. But yeah, Ridder, like that was one example where I was like, I've heard so many wonderful things about him. Luke Fickell is really like shoving him down our throats in terms of like, this is going to be the guy. And he wasn't. And then we see in the NFL that didn't translate. And he had his own fair share of issues outside of just that. But
give Sean King credit. Sean King was one of the first that said he didn't think from his body language and watching him on the sidelines, didn't think that he was going to be a good leader in the pros.
Interesting. It is. And so Caleb Williams, like the jury's out. I just hate how often we throw around the term generational talent. And we talked about that. We had Bucky Brooks on the program earlier this week. And he's like, how many are we going to have? If it's a generational talent, how many are we going to have?
Every other year.
Every other year. It is. I mean, Trevor Lawrence, generational talent. He's going to be a franchise transformer.
It's been disappointing.
Very much so.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, what do you think of that division this year? Is it the Texans now moving forward?
I like the way their team is built. I think, don't sell the Colts short. I think that, you know, the Colts were a couple ball bouncing, Jonathan not wanting to run inside the tackle and go out of bounds. I mean, they really probably should have won that game and won the division. And maybe there's a different narrative, but it's not where we look and say, oh, Jacksonville is going to dominate.
Really?
Jacksonville and the other three.
And they were an odds-on favorite last year before the season started. So, yeah, the Texans are exciting. The Colts, I'm interested to see what it'll be like with Anthony Richardson fully healthy. But you do have comeback player of the year, Joe Flacco, backing you up now. We're going to hit the break back to a little college hoops talk when we return.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
We're back here on the Lombardi Line. Remember, everybody, it's time now to sign up for a VSiN Pro annual subscription because we have an awesome deal for only $199. Instead of your typical $240 price, you get VSiN Pro access to everything we do for the entire year. That's our daily best bets with a leaderboard to see which VSiN expert has the hot hand, betting splits to show you where the money and bets are moving for every game, betting systems, premium analysis, 24/7 video access, plus links to our March Madness betting hub that's updated every day with picks for every game of the tournament. Remember, use our promo code Lombardi. That'll get you your first year of VSiN Pro access for $199. VSiN.com/subscribe and that code Lombardi. Alongside Mike Palm, Stormy Bonatoni with you. Continuing all college hoops talks as day two of the tournament rolls on. Joining us now via the Progressive guest line is Tom Casale, college basketball and college football analyst over at Sportsline. And you maybe have like my favorite tweet of the last 24 hours with the Kentucky loss yesterday. Got a hunch John Calipari will either need to focus on his health or spend more time with his family soon. That is fantastic, my friend.
Yeah, you have to, after what happened the last couple of years, you know, I don't know where the program is heading. I mean, what are we going to do next year? Cal's going to recruit a bunch of five-star guys and then what? You know, it's just not working. And personally, I just think all these older coaches within the next 3 or 4 years are going to be gone. The game's changing, the system's changing, and some of them, they're just not reacting well to how they don't react to the players don't react to them the way they used to.
Tom, I want to ask you about a game today that you have on your sheet, and it's a little bit against the public because we've seen some public money come in on Charleston to fade Alabama here. Some struggles down the stretch, obviously. Remember, they started off so hot in the SEC and were on top of the conference for a while there, but you like the Tide today.
Yeah, listen, nobody wanted to fade Alabama more than I did. But I think the opportunity is going to be in round two if St. Mary's wins. Here's the problem with the Charleston draw for me. They play the exact same way. Charleston does not drive to the hoop. So if you want to beat Alabama's defense, you drive to the hoop and you draw fouls. They're 217th in two-point percentage defense. They're 320th in opponents' foul shot attempts per game. So those like Kentucky, Tennessee, Florida, those are the types of teams that have bothered Alabama throughout the year. But if you haven't seen Charleston play, think of BYU. They're just going to stand around the three-point line and shoot, and they're going to play fast with Alabama. They're going to run up and down the court with them. I just hate the matchup. I think if Alabama went into a lab and built a team to play in round one, it would have been Charleston. So I'm going to go with them in round one and then probably go against them in round two if St. Mary's beats Grand Canyon.
Because of everything you just said with these teams that like to play fast, they can score a lot. The total's 173. Any thoughts there?
I would be surprised if Alabama didn't get to 90 in this game. You know, the only problem with a total that high in the tournament is the teams haven't played yet. And they also haven't shot in a neutral court gym, right? You always want to see how teams are going to shoot. BYU, for example, shoots a lot of threes. They didn't shoot well where they were. Oakland had no problem shooting where they in that gym, right? Mm-hmm. So that would be the only thing that concerns me with that high of a total is a slow start in that first 10 minutes while people get used to playing in the NCAA tournament.
Another team, Tom, that the public has been all over is James Madison. When the bracket was announced, a classic 12-5 game against Wisconsin. Stormy and I were just talking about Wisconsin finding their rhythm offensively. Really, after that double overtime loss in Iowa City, they've played much better with the run through the Big Ten tournament. You have a play on the total in this game.
Yeah, I don't play too many totals, but I thought this one opened up low because of the Wisconsin name. I think you hit it on the head. Wisconsin has changed the way they play because their defense is so bad. They can't play that turtle pace anymore because teams are scoring on them at will. So to me, this is going to be important in the first 5 to 10 minutes. I think James Madison can get their pace. Now, if James Madison's hitting shots, I think this game goes way over. Again, you're in a neutral site. These teams haven't played there yet. But if you look at Wisconsin over the last month of the season, you're not seeing the 62-58 games you're used to seeing from the Badgers. They're one of the worst three-point defenses in the country. And James Madison, if you haven't seen them play, is they're a high-end mid-major. They have guards. They have talent. So I think this is going to be a pretty exciting game. I know a lot of people like James Madison. I don't hate taking the 5.5, but I think this game is going to be played in the high 70s. So I went with the over.
People like to dog on Rick Barnes when it comes to tournament time, but Tennessee absolutely torched St. Pete's yesterday. Looking ahead to their game with Texas, you feel comfortable laying the number. What makes you think that they can continue that type of pace?
Well, it opened up 5.5, so I grabbed it early. This is a game, I think it's going to be entertaining. I think it's going to be competitive. But I think at some point, I don't know if Texas's defense is going to be able to hold up against Tennessee. You know, Tennessee goes on those runs in the second half. We saw it against Auburn and teams like that. So this is a game, if you don't want to lay the number, maybe wait for a live play. I'm going to look at that, too. I do think Texas is going to compete with them for a while. But I think this, again, I don't play a lot of totals, but this is another one I might look at the over if you're interested. This game's going to be played in the 70s and the 80s. You know, these SEC teams, forget about what Tennessee's defensive efficiency is. They don't play any defense in the SEC. They're going to go up and down the court. And I think Texas doesn't mind playing that way. Texas has athletes. So I see a good competitive game, but at some point, it's just too much Tennessee talent. And the problem with Texas is they're just inconsistent. To be completely honest with you, if Colorado State could have made a shot yesterday, they would have come back in that game. They had a bunch of open shots that they missed. So I just think Texas's defense, worst three-point defense in the Big 12, that's going to hurt them in this matchup.
Tom, I want to further delve into Tennessee here. They played in the second-best conference in the country, and they're out of conference. People thought they played Purdue, they played Kansas, they played North Carolina, Illinois. They have an incredible out-of-conference schedule. How much do you put into past failures of a coach? And I say, you know, the committee put Barnes and Painter in the same region, and, you know, and one of them's going to come out. How much do you put into that? I dismiss it with Barnes because I remember I'm a huge North Carolina Dean Smith guy. What he did at Clemson with talent that was much below the league level and turned those into really physical games and was very competitive, I maybe value him higher despite his lack of March success. How much do you paint in when you're handicapping tournament games, Painter and Barnes's lack of success?
Yeah, it's interesting because the tournament is every year it's its own entity. Remember when Virginia won the tournament? They won a crazy game over Purdue. They should have lost. If Purdue hangs on and wins that game and went into overtime, maybe they win the national championship that year. And we're thinking differently of Matt Painter. Mm-hmm. The thing with Rick Barnes is, people kind of forget this. I know he doesn't live in the Final Four, but he does have two Elite Eight appearances and a Final Four appearance with Texas. So it's not like he's never been there. And I just think every year you have to look at it differently. And that's to me the biggest mistake people make with the NCAA tournament. They look at past years. You know, listen, there was a few year period there where Villanova made the Final Four and then was out early, and there was rumblings. I don't know if we have the guy. The guy was Jay Wright. He turned out to be the guy because that year that people were starting to rumble, they won the national championship. So the tournament's kind of tough to have narratives. I mean, I think to me, it's going to be Purdue and Tennessee in the Elite Eight. That's how I have it, and I think that's the easiest region out of all of them.
And then, so you go from a Purdue team that was bounced in the first round last year to a North Carolina team who I see the jersey hanging behind you right now, didn't even make the tournament a year ago, and now earned one of those number one seeds trying to make a push. They have a favorable area on their side of the bracket as well. You think North Carolina could win it all?
I do. I took them at 30-1 a while back. Listen, they have some warts, like a lot of teams. But what I like about them are two things. One, as you mentioned, they didn't make the tournament last year. They have played with a different kind of intensity on the defensive side of the ball all season. So that's one thing. The other thing I like about North Carolina, they can beat you in different ways, similar to teams like Houston and UConn, where they'll run with you. They'll play fast. If you want to slow it down, they'll slow it down. They'll win a game in the 60s. And I think that's very important in the tournament, because these teams that play one style like Alabama, if they get St. Mary's is going to slow them down to a crawl. They're not going to like it. So that's why I like North Carolina. I think they can play different styles.
How concerned are you that the potential Elite Eight matchup is against Arizona in LA, and how much of a home game that's going to be for the Wildcats if that eventualizes?
I get it, but I'll say this. There's way more North Carolina fans than Arizona fans, and I think L.A. is kind of a transplant city. I don't think it's going to be 90-10. I think it's going to be more about 60-40. So we'll see, but listen, that would be a good matchup. It'd probably go down to the wire. I would lean Carolina because of the defense.
See, that's what I needed to hear as well, because I do have a North Carolina future. So appreciate you, Tom.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yeah, we'll have to have Tom on once again. Doing great stuff over there at Sportsline. We're going to hit the break. Hour two on VSiN and DraftKings Network coming up in a moment.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
If you like this show, you love the GM Shuffle. It's a must listen for every football fan. You can hear our guy, Michael Lombardi, former NFL executive, Super Bowl champ, give his unfiltered opinion on players, teams, and coaching decisions every Monday and Thursday throughout the entire year. Download and subscribe to the GM Shuffle podcast from VSiN and DraftKings today, wherever you get your podcast. You can also download the Lombardi Line in podcast form each and every day alongside Mike Palm, Stormy Bonantoni with you as we welcome you back to the Lombardi Line. And let's stick with that theme of the National Football League as we welcome in Matthew Kohler on the Progressive guest line, Vikings reporter for the Purple Insider, author of Football is a Numbers Game, at Matthew Kohler on X. Welcome in. And how are we feeling about the Vikings right now post the free agency serve and Kirk Cousins no longer in the building?
You know, I think it's kind of like that first spring day when you open up the windows and you feel that fresh air blow in. That's kind of what it feels like for Vikings fans, because over the last 6 years with Kirk Cousins, there was a malaise that kind of set in of being pretty good and being competitive, but never really going into a season where you felt like you could actually compete for a Super Bowl. And of course, there are plenty of teams in the NFL who would die to have Kirk Cousins as their quarterback. The Jets, the Bears, you know, teams that haven't had them in a long time. But there's like a different circle of hell where you win 9 games all the time and you never can quite get over the top. And with Kirk Cousins' contract, they could never figure out how to build a strong enough team. So now they get him off the books and you have this opportunity in a draft that is full of quarterbacks to pick somebody to pair that player with Justin Jefferson and Jordan Addison in an offense that is really well set up to succeed. And I think that Vikings fans were very ready for something fresh here to happen. Now it's just about making it happen. And if you guys know which quarterback they want, let me know, because we're spending every day trying to figure that out.
Matthew, how much of a possibility do you think it is that Jefferson's not on the roster in September?
0.001% chance that he's not on the roster. I mean, look, I think that it's wonderful that people have Photoshop and they can put him in lots of different jerseys on the internet. And that's cute. I personally would try to do better art than that, but you know, not everyone's talented. So that's fun, but that's not realistic at all. Like literally not any chance that Justin Jefferson is playing for someone else. I mean, first of all, they would be absolutely out of their skulls to give up the 24-year-old best receiver on earth. That's one thing. Another thing is, too, that Justin Jefferson, I know there's a lot of receivers who have forced their way out of places, but when you're on your rookie contract negotiating your second contract, that's not really an option. I mean, just the way that the collective bargaining agreement is set up, the Vikings have a fifth-year option and two franchise tags. So if Justin Jefferson wants to hang around till 2027 and wait for this, he certainly can. But, I mean, the Vikings general manager, their owner, they have all been effusive in saying over and over again, we want to get this done. They negotiated last year. They got close to a deal. And I am very confident that they will get a deal done. It's just going to take a while, though. Just like with Nick Bosa, when you have the best player at his position in the league, it is not a simple contract to work out. This isn't signing an undrafted free agent to come to work out for you at training camp. I mean, this is a very complicated deal, the structure, the years, the money. And if you're Jefferson, you're holding a lot of cards here. But he's not going to say trade me. And even if he did, they would say absolutely not. So I think that, you know, what never works for us in football media is saying, yeah, they'll get it worked out later. Let's be patient. We much prefer to be like, who could trade for him? But I don't think that's going to happen.
I do feel also like it's a little bit of a game of chicken right now between he and CeeDee Lamb. Okay, what are you going to get so that I can become the highest paid wide receiver in the National Football League right now? And also speaking to those Photoshops, yes, a lot of the proportions are very off. Even Kirk Cousins, when he went to the Falcons, I was like, who is this gigantic head? Speaking of quarterback position, though, and you say like if you guys know who they're going to trade for, everybody keeps on talking about J.J. McCarthy. You guys obviously make the deal with the Houston Texans to have an opportunity to be flexible in the draft to trade up. Like, what's your thoughts on McCarthy and if he could be the guy?
So it's so interesting because we trust draft analysts way too much, right? Like every year we say, oh, it's going to go exactly this way. We have so much confidence. And then draft night comes and we're shocked that Malik Willis is a third round pick, or we're shocked that Will Levis drops out of the first round, or Johnny Manziel drops, or whoever, Jimmy Clausen back in the day when I think, wasn't it Mel Kiper who bet his career on Jimmy Clausen, I think. And then, you know, he turned out to be a second round pick. So I think the world is assuming that it's going to go 1, 2, 3, and then someone will trade up to 4, and that someone could very well be the Vikings. I'm not 100% sure that they love J.J. McCarthy as much as the outside world thinks. They might. They don't usually tell anyone. That's just kind of how it works. But I think if it goes the way that the draft analysts believe, then the Vikings need to use their draft capital to make sure they get one of the top 4 quarterbacks in this draft, because at least it feels like there's 4 really excellent prospects and then 2 more guys that maybe you could talk yourself into. But where the Vikings are with Justin Jefferson, with Jordan Addison, TJ Hockenson, they've got this really good setup as an offense. They can make an argument that anybody that they draft, they can put into a great position. And we saw Brock Purdy succeed that way. We saw Jalen Hurts succeed pretty quickly in Philadelphia with a great offense around him. And I think the Vikings need to be able to do the same thing, which is just get someone who can execute their offense. But with McCarthy, I mean, maybe it's a little bit of a signal that they signed Sam Darnold for $10 million, because McCarthy and Drake May both are talked about as guys who might need to develop for a year before they're ready to play. And, you know, I think the Vikings have sort of set themselves up for that scenario. But, you know, the way it would seem right now, if you were sort of ranking possibilities, I would say trading up to number 4 with Arizona and trying to take either McCarthy or whoever else gets the number 4 is probably what their plan is with this trade. But since it didn't happen right away, another trade to the top, now I'm wondering about all the different scenarios that could potentially take place here.
Matt, how impactful do you think Aaron Jones will be on this team?
I think it's going to be huge. A lot of different ways. I mean, number one, the Vikings, since Kevin O'Connell took over in 2022, have been an absolutely abysmal running game. One of the worst in the league. I think they were 29th in yards per attempt last year. It didn't work out to go from Dalvin Cook to Alexander Mattison, but it wasn't particularly good with the older version of Dalvin Cook either. Now, Aaron Jones, that's the one concern, is that he's had the injuries. His last 5 games are amazing, but as far as a full season last year, he didn't get the 700 yards. But I think that paired with Ty Chandler, they can have a bit of a duo there of similar type of running backs. But you know, from Aaron Jones's perspective, if you're bringing in a young quarterback to play, having that guy there to pass protect for you, to get screen passes, to set you up in second down and five, second down and four in these favorable situations. And the other thing is too, that just from Aaron Jones's first press conference, you know, he walks in the room and sits down and starts talking for a couple minutes. You're like, okay, this is like a leadership superstar type of vibe that this team is, you know, they're losing their leader in Kirk Cousins. And I think they need that guy in their locker room with a young quarterback, because that's very difficult for a young QB to just come in and be the guy. So I think Aaron Jones allows for like a lot of different ways that he can sort of permeate their success. Aside from just the fact that this guy averages 5 yards a rush for his career. That's the same as Barry Sanders. Like I don't think we give Aaron Jones quite enough credit for how great he's been.
Vikings reporter Matthew Kohler joining us on the Progressive guest line. And obviously here at this network, we look at things from a betting perspective. And in terms of the odds in the NFC North, the Lions are the favorite, followed by the Packers and Bears, and all those numbers pretty close. And then you've got the Vikings as a 10-1 long shot, the clear cut last team in the division, according to odds makers. Do you agree, or where do you see the Vikings in the pecking order of the division?
Yeah, I think it's probably third or fourth. They're just, you know, they're not there yet. Like, they're going to have to take a step back with their quarterback situation and with the fact that they moved on from so much talent between 2022 and 2023. They let numerous Pro Bowl players go, and those are not easy to replace. They haven't drafted particularly well on the defensive side recently. So I think they have enough offensive firepower to compete for a wild card spot. But if you're comparing them to teams that have been building for this for years, like Detroit, and then, you know, Green Bay with what they did last year, and I think they're ascending, you know, I really think it's going to be hard. That last spot, though, because none of us know what Caleb Williams is going to be, third or fourth is probably where I'd put them right now.
And as far as your thoughts on the Vikings and a regular season win total, what are your projections? Do you think this is a team that can be over 500, can win 10 games perhaps?
The hard part about that is, like, who's playing quarterback? Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, if it's Sam Darnold, like, could Sam Darnold win 9 games? I think he probably could. I mean, that sounds crazy, but he went 8-9 as the Panthers starter. So with this team, like, I think that they're well enough coached and have good enough players around him to win, you know, probably 8 or 9 games. But I'd be pretty scared of that over-under if I'm making that bet right now.
Matthew, appreciate your time. Enjoy March Madness this offseason.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Matthew Kohler. Make sure you check out the Purple Insider. We're going to step aside here. When we come back, we'll give you some score updates. We got
overtime
in Northwestern FAU. Aztecs up 10 against UAB and more.